Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
For hundreds of years, anthropologists have studied the social relationships of human beings. And none have been more confounding than what they call the different strokes effect.
Get it?
Meet Jade Gulliver. A charmingly low-maintenance, amicable sci-fi fan and avid podcaster. And David Lim, a top model-strutting, goldfish-loving, walking jukebox. So, can you handle the difference? Get ready for Different Strokes.
It takes different strokes to move the world. Yes, it does. It takes different strokes to move the world.
Okay, so Dave, you must feel so lucky to go and watch these shows that you would never have thought to watch ever before.
Look, I always go on the personal recommendation of a friend when it comes to TV shows because I'm quite loyal with the series that I watch.
Tune in for a Different Strokes take on television.
This is Different Strokes on Joy 94.9 with Jade and Dave. We have the great pleasure of being joined by John Richards, who is going to sit in with us on our TV segment because we're covering the best TV of the decade, and why not get a specialised expert in the topic?
Well, that's alarming, isn't it? Right, I'm an expert now. Hello, Jade. Hello, Dave.
I claim myself as an expert sometimes. Well, I kind of get like lumped with, Jade, you take care of the TV.
Well, the weird thing is that when you go on the radio doing anything,
you're an expert.
You are an expert because broadcaster goes in the front of anything.
Yeah.
Like, you know, special guest broadcaster. Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm sure I've created a bit of a list here of my best TV shows of the decade, and I'm sure you're going to come in and like naysay me all the way with some like highbrow analysis.
I was going to probably agree with everything. we should probably say yes. You're saying one of the reasons I'm here is because a Box Cutters podcast, which is a thing we do over Triple R, which looks at TV. So roughly 50 weeks of the year I'm looking at television.
Mm-hmm.
And we do an awful lot of talking about television as a form.
Mm-hmm.
So that should I do the highfalutin bit now, or should we? I do have a highfalutin concept to throw it at you.
Okay, throw the highfalutin concept.
The decade, looking at the decade of TV, right? I think what has happened in this decade, and this is going to be massively important from here on in, is we saw the split between television being that box that sits in the corner of your room that you watch things on, and television being the form of content that is perhaps a narrative story told in 13 episodes or 22 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I think we saw a really bizarre split, particularly in the last couple of years. So down to the point where famously on Box Cutters, I don't actually have free-to-air reception. I can't actually pick up television in my flat. There's a problem with the antennas.
And you've seriously been mentioning that on the Box Cutters podcast for I don't know how long.
Years. Yeah. I'm obsessed. But it actually has in no way interrupted my ability to be able to do a podcast about television because most people, I think, now are watching TV in the form of DVD box sets, in downloads, streamed on things like iView, the ABC's website. Many of the other channels now do it as well, both legal and illegal ways of doing this. And I think that has actually become the way to watch television.
Mm-hmm.
And by television, I'm probably, capital T television, serious television. Like, if you want to watch, if you want to watch Lost, if you want to watch 6 Feet Under, even if you watch 30 Rock, you're probably not going to let the TV station tell you when to watch it because it'll be on at the wrong time.
Exactly.
It'll disappear from week to week. You know, you use TV now, I think, to watch more immediate disposable television, which is like, things like the news or
talent shows.
Yeah. reality shows, because I don't think you're probably not going to buy that in DVD. You're probably not going to download it. But then some people obsessed with things like The Amazing Race do that. But that's what I think is an interesting thing. We've seen this split between that thing that used to show us television and the thing we watch as television. And I suspect television is now one of the biggest selling DVDs as well.
It is, because, I mean, like people like me, I just don't have time to watch TV. And what I have is, like, let's say a night off on a weekend, and that's where I catch up on all my series, and out comes the, TV on DVD sets.
Yeah.
Like, I don't remember the last time I watched TV this year, to be honest.
Well, it was also so we watched 6 Feet Under Series 3 in download form. Series 1 and 2 we'd watched on DVD. To have to actually wait a week between episodes was really annoying. Yeah. Like, I've forgotten that's how we used to watch
television. That's how we used to do it, yeah.
It's very much been a decade where we've essentially taken back control. Like, we've taken control of a lot of things, and TV is probably one of those things. It's where, you know, it's all about, I want it right now, and don't make me wait for it.
And I think all of our entertainment's doing that to a degree as well. So, you know, hence the rise of the podcast. I think the podcast has actually revived radio, and but things like there's an awful lot of radio on demand, streaming radio, and with TV, it's like we want to watch it when we want it.
Mm.
And we don't want to wait 6 months for that American series to show up on Channel 7 at midnight. Yeah. You know,
it might be on at midnight, and then it's on at 10:30, and then and it's back at 9, and then it's on for 6 weeks, and then golf. It's off again.
We're just not going to do that anymore. And I think that's kind of interesting. In some ways, it's splintering what we're doing with television. We're not all watching the same program at the same time.
Yeah.
But I think it's also in some ways making us... that's a cherish, and that's a terrible word. Oh, how pretentious. It makes us cherish it a bit more. I think we actually see it as something more important, and at the same time, we're also getting more out of television. I think cinema has kind of crashed as a medium for adults, at the same time that the HBO-style drama series has really risen the quality of writing and acting. And I think, we're wanting to go out and pay $50 to buy that now because it's really good.
Yeah, I think it's all to do with the writing, really. No one would pay money to watch a crappy TV series.
Mm-hmm.
So if the quality of writing improves and the quality of acting and directing and all that improves that way, the quality of the entertainment obviously improves as well. And then, you know, that gives people more incentive to go and buy the DVDs or, you know, tune in to the shows.
And some of this is rewatchable, which is probably, we're also probably the first time around that people are actually making television knowing people are going to be watching it more than once. It used to be TV would go to air and it would disappear, and maybe there'd be a video later on. But people now are writing things knowing that people are going to have them on DVD and putting things in so you can watch them again. You know, trying to put more themes in and more kind of interactive and
stuff that you're not necessarily going to catch in one watching. It's like something that you have to watch over and over again.
Exactly,
you're going to get something completely different each time.
So speaking of quality shows like that, I mean, I wonder how many of them are on your list, Jade.
So you can't tell, Jade. What have you got?
I think I'm on slightly less serious side to you, John, because I've put down 30 Rock.
I love 30 Rock.
Yeah.
I am Liz Lemon.
Yes.
I mean, I know everyone thinks they're Liz Lemon, but really, I'm Liz Lemon.
I just sit there and go, I love Liz Lemon. Yeah. Like, that's
well,
my
no
whole...
competition. I know I'm Jenna.
Oh, that's alarmingly true.
Yeah. My fragrance is coming out soon.
No, I love 30 Rock. I think 30 Rock is one of the best comedies we've seen ever.
I also had Arrested Development on that list.
I've tried.
You don't like it?
I don't think I dislike it. It's funny, Arrested Development is this one that splits dinner parties.
It does.
And it really is this weird thing of there are people who love it and there are people who are slightly ashamed to admit they don't love it. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how it works. Me going, I haven't watched The Wire yet either. Okay, I know.
Oh, you haven't watched The Wire?
I've watched 3 episodes of The Wire.
Really? I wrote down The Wire because I thought for sure this is going to be a John one. John's going to bring out The Wire.
No, Josh Canal always has a go at me for the fact that I've managed to watch 3 episodes over about 6 months or something. I'm trying.
Can we claim The X-Files and Buffy in this decade?
Not this decade.
I want to, but I know that they're really 90s programs.
Buffy, I think we can. But yeah, The X-Files seems so wedded to the 90s that I'm, I would, because even though
When did it officially stop, Jade?
It officially stopped in 2003.
Okay. Oh, okay. I was saying 2003, but everyone did stop watching around 98. So I think there's,
Not Jade.
I do think there's a quintessential 90s-ness to The X-Files. Yes. Yeah, it's
steeped I just think Mulder and Scully are the ultimate characters. I love them.
Surely there are other characters on your list and other TV shows.
Yeah, but they were great. Like, they're just a great, you know, the fact that they had a great relationship and a great sort of chemistry between them that was not in any way kind of this, I don't know, like, at the time I was a teenager and it was, you know, when being a teenager where it was like everything turned into like some massive drama and, you know, they were all in love with each other and it was just like...
Well, That's what I loved about them at first, because they were one of the only male-female couples on television who obviously weren't interested in each other sexually at all. Like, there was not a slight romantic spark between
although
them.
Although some rom-com
people. Well, but that was the thing. Suddenly it was like, series four. Oh, they've been in love with each other. Went, really? Really? And I think for a queer audience.
It was actually in season six. But, do you want to talk about the queer references? Remember they brought in more characters? They brought in that female character after David Duchovny left the show.
Oh, towards the end.
Towards the end. And she originally was supposed to be bisexual. And it was, when you go back and watch it, you can actually kind of, with my perverted eyes, I put in this whole thing. Like, I was like, she's into Scully. It's really weird. Like, and then I went back and read on the internet that she was initially supposed to be bisexual.
Oh, and then they copped out?
Yeah.
See, that's so sad.
Yeah.
That is. Yeah, and I was just saying, as a queer audience, it's so exciting to be able to watch a male-female couple and not think that they're meant to be shagging.
Yeah.
So then to kind of go into that is a bit disappointing.
Oh,
so,
what else makes your list?
I'm trying to think what else was in. Oh, Mad Men was the one I got obsessed with recently. Have you watched Mad Men?
No.
Either of you? No. And again, this is one I think people have only watched on DVD. I don't think anyone's actually... Apparently SBS showed it.
Mm-hmm.
The other interesting thing, there's been a rise of low-budget English stuff in the last few years, which has been really interesting. Dead Set is in particular one. It was a Channel 4 six-part zombie series set in the Big Brother house.
No way. Yeah. I've heard of this one.
This SBS again showed that recently. Great. It's really great. And the funny thing is, you sit down assuming it's going to be a sitcom, for the premise. No, it's a genuinely serious zombie film. And it's basically it's a zombie film in six parts on telly. But the idea that the only people, unaffected by the zombie outbreak are the people in the Big Brother house who don't know what's happened. Yeah. So
this is Different Strokes on Joy 94.9 with Jade and Dave. Dave, when you said to me, pick your top 10 albums of the decade, I was like, you are fucking crazy. And you better edit that out.
Oh, we're on late enough. It doesn't matter.
Okay, at first you said five, and I was like, okay, five's going to be really, really hard.
Yep.
And I got to five, and I was like, oh, God, now I don't know what to do. I've got about seven others.
I got a very frantic SMS in the middle of the night going, 10.
Yeah. So I'll just quickly go through my 10. And
God, can you start from 10 to 1? Oh, have you not
Ordered them. I haven't, preferenced them at all.
Okay. That would have been hard.
My key criteria for me in choosing these 10 over any of the others that I would have chosen, and I'm sure I'm going to cop flack from, the hipster indie crowd for what I'm about to choose.
Whoa.
But it's more for me, the albums that I've chosen are albums that I've listened to over and over again and been some sort of obsessed with at some point. Like, it's to me, it was more about, it's not about how critically acclaimed they are. It's not about how many awards they won. It was nothing. It's more about my enjoyment of those particular albums.
Amen to that, sister.
And anyway, so this is what I've got. Tegan and Sarah, The Con. I mean, I talk about this album all of the time. So it was their fifth full-length album. It came out in 2007. It had all of these guest performers on the album, Jason McGeer from Death Cab for Cutie, for example. There was also Khaki King was on one. And I just love it. It's just full of... I could listen to it just over and over and over again. A lot of Tegan and Sarah fans talk about the difference between a Tegan song and a Sarah song.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Splitting hairs much?
Yeah, I don't get into all of that kind of thing.
So is there more Tegan songs or more Sarah songs than The Con?
I don't know. I have absolutely no idea. I don't care. I can see that there are kind of themes in terms of what they do. And the other thing I love about The Con, and now if you actually own the physical CD of it.
I have seen it before in a data digipack.
They have a DVD that goes along with it where you play it, and every day after they finish recording, they did this bizarre sort of mini TV show where they'd call someone randomly and just talk to them. And it was their mom, and they talked to, this weird person who was their friend. It was just hilarious. That to me I just loved it. But
so that added to your enjoyment of the whole Con era.
Yeah. So that's The Con. Another one I'm going to chuck in there, and I'm going to cop flack for this one, is The Killers' Hot Fuss, which came out. It was the Killers' debut album. It was released in 2004, and all of the Sam's Town, supporters are going to, like, lose their nut.
That's what I don't understand. I mean, I assume Samstown's not on the list.
Samstown is not on the list, no.
So, I mean, I would have picked you to be the more gritty, indie kind of fan of the Killers that would gravitate towards Samstown. Yeah. Whereas I thought Hot Fuss was aimed at someone like me, perhaps, because I enjoyed a lot of the pop tunes on that album.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny that you say that, because the reason Hot Fuss appeals to me is because of those popular songs. Like, you know, somebody told me, Mr. Brightside, All the Things They've Done, Smile Like You Mean It. I love all of those songs. I think they're great songs. And I just kind of, like, you know, Samstown to me is a bit kind of like introspective and serious.
Sophomore slump.
Yeah, and it's a bit kind of like, you know, oh, we're trying to be all, you know, serious and in, you know, that kind of thing. I just like...
good pop from them.
Yeah, it just seemed a bit more, I don't know, I'm not really into the sort of ego side of things. And it just seems like that was them, you know, Samstown onwards is more them being, you know, oh, we're serious artists, we're like, you know, it's kind of that indie hipster snobbery thing.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That's really interesting, Jade. I wouldn't have picked you to go for Hot Fuss.
You know what? I go for snobs.
No. No, absolutely not. No.
I don't tolerate snobbery. Another one I'm going to go for is Green Day's American Idiot. Mm. That came out in 2004. It was, I guess, what I find really cool about that album is that it's a rock opera. So there's sort of this natural story that goes through the whole thing.
Really?
Yes.
The way they've sequenced the track?
The way they've sequenced So you're supposed to listen to the whole CD, like, end to end without a break. Like,
that's really interesting.
It's a storytelling, you know, it's a storytelling album. I mean, there's obviously, like, you know, the big singles that came out of that, like, you know, Wake Me Up When September Ends and American Idiot. But there's, you know, sort of these long orchestral, you know, sort of things going on, and there's, you know, all of these songs that are like three songs jammed together and all of that.
Very much a concept album,
I guess. It is.
Not a lot of people do that, really.
And it's interesting that it came from Green Day, because Green Day had this kind of really kind of punk, like, two minute like songs that were, you know, about getting high and women, and it was just kind of that kind of really boysy type, you know, slacker stuff, and then they come up with this thing, you know, this really something, great album,
yeah.
it completely rebroke them in terms of, you know, their popularity as well, I think. Ben Lee's Awake Is the New Sleep, of course, I couldn't not mention it. So it came out in 2005. Catch My Disease, Gamble Everything for Love. We all know those songs. Mm. But I just, you know, I've been a huge Ben Lee fan for a very, very long time. And it was a big shift for me to get from his angsty stuff into Awake Is the New Sleep. And I think a lot of my love for that particular album is around the fact that I was over in the US, and I got to see him, you know, perform that whole album live in this really intimate gig. And, you know, it was very early on. It was before it was out here, and, you know, that kind of,
yeah,
that feeling. That's kind of why I love that album. I've got the Shins Shoots Too Narrow, which came out in 2003. Like, have a look at the album artwork of Shoots Too Narrow. It's just so, like,
so it's not just cartoony, it's not just the body of material, like, not the songs. It's also how it's packaged.
Yeah, it's a package and how it makes you feel. Like, I just think...
that's great. Yeah.
It's very kind of... the next album, Wincing the Night Away, was a bit like, you know, that was after they kind of got really popular. And then O Inverted World ended up becoming more popular because of, remember when Garden State came out? And
this is like before my time, Jay.
Yeah, so so Garden State came out, and they had two Shin songs. And this is kind of this weird period of time where the Shins weren't, like, particularly well known, and then they became huge because they were, you know, two of their songs were on this soundtrack to Zach Braff, you know, and Zach Braff is like the ultimate geek, right? Like, this kind of, so
it was a good match.
Yeah, it kind of bumped them, and, you know, now suddenly they're this mainstream band. It's really kind of interesting to see how they've changed. I've also got in here Death Cab for Cutie's Plans. Now, I had struggled to choose between Transatlanticism, which is their other album prior to Plans and Plans. So, but I ended up going with Plans just because it's actually around one song, I Will Follow You Into the Dark. And the other one that I absolutely love is Marching Bands of Manhattan. That I mean, those are two
we've
really great
them on
songs.
Our shows.
Yes, yeah. We've played them both on our show so many times. So that album came out in 2005. It was just, I mean, they when they describe those two albums, they actually say Transatlanticism was an inhale and Plans is an exhale.
Oh, how poetic!
Yeah, so it's the indie people.
Meanwhile, does Beyoncé think that much about her double disc album? I don't think so.
I couldn't not mention this album, Mates of State Rearrange Us, which came out just last year in 2008. And who doesn't know Get Better? It's a great song. But you know what I love about Rearrange Us and Mates of State? They're just so bouncy.
You like that kind of... there are moments. I know you like kind of snuggling music.
Yeah.
But then there are moments where you like your bouncy indie pop.
Yeah, well, they were bouncy and they're kind of like... Every song on that album is very kind of... It makes me happy to listen to that album over and over again. It's got that kind of like really warm feeling about it. I'm going to pick a 2009 album.
Oh, so this one's a late entry for our album of the decade.
Yes, I've gone with Phoenix's Wolfgang Amadeus Phoenix. We've got our program support guy, Nick, to thank for this because he actually, you know, nervously came up to me with a Phoenix CD. He was like, you have to listen to this. You know, Phoenix are great. You know, you're going to love it. And he actually gave me their previous album called United. And then as soon as I listened to it, I thought, oh, this is great. And I went out and bought this album right afterwards. Some of the songs you might want to listen to are Listomania, 1901, Too Young, great songs. Postal Service Give Up. So the Postal Service is sort of this weird band that's an amalgamation band. And so it's got Ben Gibbard from Death Cab for Cutie. A lot of the additional vocals are done by Jenny Lewis, who was in Rilo Kiley. There's a producer from this other band that's kind of a weird name. His name's Jimmy Tamborello, who's quite well known in the indie scene.
So it's like a temporary band of these.
And the reason it's called the Postal Service is because they actually would like record stuff individually and mail it to each other.
How old school? No internet. Just upload my MP3. Mm. No.
So the album Give Up came out in 2003. It's got some great songs on it. I love them all. But the problem is with this album, right, is they've been promising for so long that they're going to bring out a new album, and they haven't.
Well, they've all got their own solo
careers. Yeah, they do.
And they've got their own bands, so it's you kind of forgive them for not coming back and doing another one.
I know, but it's just like, you know, everyone's just like, oh, there's a new Postal Service coming soon. There's a new Postal Service, and it's like, you know, every so often there's a flare-up.
Do you think the lineup will change?
I don't know that the lineup could change. I mean, perhaps they might not necessarily get Jenny Lewis in to do vocals because I don't think she was officially part of the Postal Service project. It was more like, oh, we need a female vocalist here. Let's get Jenny Lewis in to do it. And the last one I'm going to mention is Franz Ferdinand's debut album, which is actually a self-titled that was released in February 2004. Some of the songs, Take Me Out, The Dark of the Matinee, my girlfriend is actually a huge fan of Michael, which is so he's a singing, you know, she's like, he's singing about a guy, like,
yeah,
that kind of interesting gay thing going on.
I love that song. I remember when you played it on Different Strokes, I just thought, ooh, interesting. In any case, that's Jade, your album of the decade.
Yeah, I know, that felt like a marathon.
Welcome to Different Strokes Online. Log in to hear Jade and Dave's perspectives on online media.
The internet should not be used as a high-tech babysitter. We need to make sure that when our kids surf the web, they don't drown.
You're listening to Different Strokes on Joy 94.9. Okay, tonight what I'm bringing to your attention is a website/iPhone app called Audio Boo. Now, the interesting thing about this is it's been said to be the spoken word equivalent of, say, YouTube or Twitter. Now, it's a website and iPhone app that lets people record and publish 5-minute long digital recordings. And the recordings, or they're called Boos, can be posted on your Audio Boo website, where you can actually have your own page or channel. It's much like Twitter and much like YouTube, you can have people subscribe and, you know, download, not sub, sorry, not download. You can have people subscribe and follow you. So when you upload your Boos, you know, these people that have subscribed to your channel can actually hear them as they come in. Now, this is a very interesting concept because, you know, what we like to do on Different Strokes is we like looking at various websites out there for our online segment, look at social media and how that is evolving and how that is changing. And I honestly, when I came across Audio Boo, I kind of thought, this screams nothing for me. This does not appeal to me because I'm already on radio. You know, Different Strokes is podcasted. So why would I need Audio Boo? But then I thought about it. Look, it could really work in a sense for people that want to do audio diaries per se. So I think it would really work if you are an interesting character yourself and you, let's say, at the end of every day, do a quick audio grab about what your day's been like. You know, like if you as a character is interesting or is articulate, it'll be very fun to listen to, I reckon. So something personal, something raw and unconventional like that, I can imagine really working with Audio Boo. Citizen journalism is another thing I thought as well could really work when it comes to this software, because really, as soon as you record it on your iPhone, you could just upload it onto the website. So there's really no quicker way of getting your live interview or your live audio grab from the scene itself right up to the internet. So I can see that really working well. Here's the other thing with Audio Boo. So when I went to the website, I looked at it and I thought, gee, this looks really shoddy. Like, did some first year graphics, you know, web designer put this together? It looks thrown together. It just doesn't look right. Doesn't look professional. And the best part was it reads, "Welcome to Audio Boo on the web. We know this site is a bit scrappy, but bear with us as we find some time to make it pretty." Sorry. Why would you admit that? We can see that it looks bad. So, you know, I'm not so sure if you want to sound, if that's the thing to say or that's a thing to type. If you want to come across as a professional website, you shouldn't be admitting to stuff like that. You should just make time, fix it, stop pointing it out, because, you know, for all you know, some people subscribing to Audio Boo probably don't even realize that it looks scrappy until you pointed it out. Another thing that I thought was really strange about the website is that I feel that Audio Boo doesn't quite have its own voice, which is quite ironic. But if you look at sites like Twitter and Tumblr, the way they write, the way they, you know, like things like the Twitter fail whale, that's just so iconic. We need an equivalent of a Twitter fail whale on Audio Boo. You know, it needs to have its own identity. It needs to have its own voice and character. And that's one thing I feel that this website or this brand is lacking. Another thing that I thought was, I might just throw in something positive because this is just like, you know, bitch is throwing shade at the website. What's he doing? But I can actually see there really is a plus side to a website like Audio Boo, because if I wasn't on radio and, you know, I'm probably too lazy to do my own podcast program, I think Audio Boo would be just as effective for me to broadcast my voice, my thoughts and my content. See, I really think that it's great because it gives you, I mean, the thrill of broadcasting and also being able to physically interact with your followers. The thing about radio is that it's very strange. You know, if nobody rings the station, nobody SMSs in or email in, it's like no one's listening when I'm talking right now. But the thing with Audio Boo is that people can comment. It's just easier for people to just click and comment as they are listening to you. Things like Twitter and all that, it's so much easier for people to respond and interact with you. So I think there is a plus point to this. And, you know, not everyone has the time or the resources to put together a podcast program. But what you can do is you can have Audio Boo and you could just throw it together. As long as it's within 5 minutes, you can upload it and you can have a following. You could be huge. You could be the next Audio Boo star. Who would have thought? But in terms of whether it's going to come close to upstaging podcasts, look, I'm used to listening to podcast programs of a certain quality, like Different Strokes, insert plug. But, you know, I think the point of Audio Boo is not so much to have the same kind of polished long-winded, more luxurious listening experience. I think it's more for the spontaneity and the rawness. I think that's what you want when you're listening to someone's boos or when you're subscribing to someone's audio boo. So that's just my thought on it. I'm yet to sign up, but rest assured, the day I get booted off air, that could very well be a possibility for me. You're listening to Different Strokes on Joy 94.9.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.